A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
So Daniel sent us this one, and the timing couldn't be sharper. Suno, the AI music generator, just disclosed a breach. 55 million accounts compromised. That number alone is big, but not unprecedented. What makes this different is what was in the dump. Names, email addresses, passwords, partial credit card numbers, and physical home addresses. That last one changes the stakes entirely. Daniel wants to know what duty of care companies actually owe when they collect data that can put you at physical risk, what liability they face when they fail, and if you're one of the 55 million, what you should actually do about it.
The TechCrunch piece today confirmed the scale through Have I Been P1ed, and the breach detail view for Suno users is showing address and partial credit card data right there in the data classes field. That's a different emotional experience than seeing password and email. You go from annoyance to a kind of cold dread. And the Gizmodo and CNET reporting adds another layer. This wasn't just a user database scrape. The attacker got source code and training data too.
So this wasn't someone poking a SQL injection hole in the login page and running off with the CSV. This was deep infrastructure access.
Right. And that matters for the duty of care question because it suggests systemic failures, not a single misconfigured endpoint. When an attacker can exfiltrate source code, training data, and the full user database, they've been inside the network for a while or they found a path that should have been segmented off. Either way, that's not a slip-up. That's architectural negligence.
And yet the response pattern we've seen from companies in these situations, and Daniel flagged this, is the finger-pointing. It's our managed security provider. It's our firewall vendor. It's the third party who handles our payment processing. The notification email reads like a corporate game of hot potato.
Which is legally and practically nonsense. Under essentially every data protection framework that matters, the data controller retains ultimate responsibility. You can outsource the processing. You can outsource the security operations. You can't outsource the liability. If Suno hired a managed security provider and that provider failed, Suno is still the one who collected 55 million addresses and promised to protect them.
The MSP's contract probably caps their liability at the value of the contract itself, so Suno might be able to claw back 6 months of service fees. Meanwhile, 55 million people's addresses are circulating.
The MSP's standard contract limits damages to whatever you paid them, maybe a few $100,000. The actual harm from a breach of this scale is orders of magnitude larger. So the company is left holding a liability gap, and they try to close it by pointing at the MSP in their customer notifications. It's a PR strategy, not a legal one.
Let's get into what the attacker actually walked away with, because the data categories here are worth examining one by one. Names and email addresses, baseline. Everyone's had those leaked a dozen times. Passwords, also baseline, though whether they were hashed and with what algorithm matters enormously. Suno hasn't disclosed that yet, which is itself a red flag.
If they were storing passwords with anything weaker than Bcrypt or Argon 2, that's a separate failure. But honestly, the password question is almost secondary here because the real story is the address and the partial credit card numbers. Let's talk about those partial card numbers because I think there's a misconception that partial means harmless.
Walk me through it. First six and last four digits. What does that actually give an attacker?
PCI DSS explicitly allows merchants to store the first six digits and the last four digits of a card number. The first six are the bank identification number that tells you which bank issued the card, what type of card it is, sometimes even what level. The last four are the digits most commonly used for account verification when you call your bank. The middle six digits are the ones that must be truncated or hashed.
So an attacker with the first six and last four knows your bank, your card type, and the digits that customer service uses to verify your identity. Combined with your name and home address, that's a social engineering kit.
That's exactly what it is. I can call your bank. I know your name. I know your address. I know the last four of your card. I know what type of card it is. I say I lost my card and need a replacement sent to my home address, which I also have. Or, I call a different service where you have an account, use those details to pass identity verification, and trigger an account recovery. The partial card number isn't the weapon. It's the key that unlocks the door when combined with everything else.
And the address is the multiplier. A credential breach without an address is a digital problem. Change your password, enable two-factor authentication, move on. An address makes it physical. Someone knows where you live now. That opens the door to doxing, swatting, stalking, physical theft, or just the low-grade anxiety of knowing your home is in a dataset that's being traded.
There's a psychological dimension here that breach reporting often misses. Have I Been Pwned doesn't just tell you you were in a breach, it shows you the specific data classes. So a Suno user checks their email on Troy Hunt's service and sees email address, password, name, physical address, partial credit card. That's a visceral moment. You're not thinking about password rotation policy. You're thinking about whether you need to be worried about someone showing up at your door.
And that's where the duty of care question gets sharp. If a company collects your home address, they've taken on a responsibility that goes beyond digital security. They've entered the realm of physical safety. I'd argue the standard of care should be higher for address data than for email addresses, and our legal frameworks haven't fully caught up to that distinction.
Let's talk about what the legal frameworks actually say, because this is where people's expectations often outpace reality. In the United States, there's no federal private right of action for data breaches. You can't simply sue a company because your data was exposed in a breach. You need to show concrete harm, identity theft, financial loss, fraud that you can trace directly to the breach.
So if my address is in the Suno dump and I'm just really angry and feel violated, that's not enough to bring a lawsuit?
Correct. You need damages. The emotional distress of knowing your address is out there. Courts have generally not recognized that as a sufficient injury for standing. The Supreme Court's decision in TransUnion versus Ramirez in 2021 reinforced this. You need a concrete injury, not just a statutory violation. Now, if someone uses that address and partial card data to commit identity fraud against you, then you have standing. But you have to wait until the harm materializes.
Which is a perverse incentive structure. The company's liability is lowest precisely when their security is worst, because if the breach is so comprehensive that it enables future harm, the harm hasn't happened yet at the moment of disclosure.
That's a very sharp way to put it, and it's why the regulatory route has been more effective than private lawsuits. The FTC has brought actions under Section 5 of the FTC Act, which prohibits unfair or deceptive practices. The landmark case was against Wyndham Hotels in 2015, three breaches in 2 years, and the FTC argued that their security practices were so inadequate that their privacy policy claims about protecting customer data were deceptive. The Third Circuit affirmed it. The FTC can require companies to implement comprehensive security programs, submit to audits for 20 years, and pay settlements. But that money goes to the government, not to the affected individuals. It punishes the company, but doesn't compensate the victims.
So the FTC can slap Suno's wrist or even break their wrist, but the 55 million people whose addresses are floating around get nothing, unless they can prove individual financial harm.
That's the American framework. The European approach under GDPR is different in theory. Article 82 explicitly provides a right to compensation for material or non-material damage caused by a GDPR infringement. And the Court of Justice of the European Union has said that non-material damage doesn't require a specific threshold of seriousness. Even the fear of future misuse can qualify.
So in Europe, the anger and anxiety might actually be compensable?
In theory. In practice, the compensation amounts for non-material damage have been modest. Hundreds of euros, not thousands, unless there's demonstrable financial harm. And you still have to go through the process of claiming it. But the right exists, and that's a meaningful difference from the US approach. GDPR also requires notification within 72 hours of becoming aware of a breach, which creates a different dynamic around transparency.
Suno is a US company, though. Does GDPR even apply to their users?
If they have users in the EU, yes. And with 55 million accounts, they almost certainly do. So there's a bifurcated liability picture. U.S. users have limited recourse unless they can show concrete harm. EU users have a theoretical right to compensation that in practice yields small payouts. Neither is particularly satisfying if you're sitting there looking at your address in a breach notification.
Which brings us to the practical question Daniel raised. If you're one of the 55 million, what do you actually do? And what should you demand from Suno?
Let's start with verification, because Daniel asked specifically about this. If you find out through Have I Been Pwned before Suno notifies you, which happens constantly, Troy Hunt's service is often faster than corporate disclosure processes. You should absolutely contact the company. But don't use any links and emails you might receive. Go directly to Suno's website or security page.
And what should you ask them that goes beyond what's in the news?
Four specific questions. First, was the address data encrypted at rest? Not encrypted in transit. Everything's encrypted in transit. At rest. If it wasn't, that's a serious failure. Second, what was the dwell time? How long was the attacker in the system before detection? If they don't know or won't say, that tells you something. Third, what authentication method was compromised? Was it a single factor, an API key, a compromised employee account? Fourth, are you offering credit monitoring that specifically includes identity theft insurance covering address-based fraud?
That last one is important. Standard credit monitoring watches for new accounts opened in your name. It doesn't do anything about someone using your address for social engineering or physical world fraud.
Right, and most breach settlement offers include a year of credit monitoring from one of the big three bureaus. That's table stakes at this point. Given the address exposure, Suno should be offering something more comprehensive. Whether they'll is a different question.
You mentioned the dwell time question. Why does that matter to the individual user?
Because it tells you the window during which your data was potentially being actively misused before you even knew it was exposed. If the attacker was inside Suno's infrastructure for 6 months before detection, that's 6 months where your address and partial card data could have been used for account takeovers at other services. It changes your remediation timeline.
And if Suno won't answer these questions?
Then you have your answer, just not the one you wanted. A company that's transparent about a breach will share the forensic details they have. A company that stonewalls is either hiding the severity or doesn't know, and neither is reassuring.
Let's talk about the actual steps someone should take. Daniel mentioned feeling angry and wanting to demand answers, which is completely reasonable. But there's also a checklist of immediate actions that can't wait for Suno's PR department to get its act together.
Step 1 is check. Have I been pwned? Don't wait for the notification email. Go to the site, enter your email, and look at the breach detail for Suno specifically. See exactly which data classes are flagged for your account. That tells you your personal risk exposure. If your address is in there, you're in a different category than someone who just had their email exposed.
Step 2?
Freeze your credit. All three bureaus, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion. It's free, it takes about 15 minutes per bureau, and it prevents anyone from opening new credit accounts in your name. With address and partial card data exposed, you're a prime target for account takeover and new account fraud. A credit freeze is the single most effective thing you can do.
And step 3 is about that breach notification email itself. Daniel's concern about phishing is well-founded. Breach notifications are a common vector for follow-up attacks. Attackers know you're expecting an email from the company, so they send a fake one with a malicious link.
Never click links in a breach notification, ever. If the email says click here to reset your password, go to the website directly and navigate to the password reset page yourself. If it says click here to enroll in credit monitoring, find the enrollment page through the company's official security communications. It's a small inconvenience that prevents a much larger problem.
And if you're already using a password manager, which you should be, and you had a unique password for Suno, the password exposure is less urgent. Change it, yes, but you don't have the cascade problem of that password being reused across a dozen other services.
That's the thing about password managers that people miss. They're not just about convenience, they're about containment. When a breach happens, the blast radius is one service, not your entire digital life.
Let's zoom out to the broader question Daniel raised about the expanding attack surface. Federated login, API integrations, every new service that asks for your data. the number of companies holding sensitive information about each person keeps growing, and each one is a potential breach vector.
And the Suno breach is interesting in this context because Suno isn't a bank or a healthcare provider. It's an AI music generator. People signed up to make songs, not to entrust their physical safety to a company. But Suno collected addresses anyway, probably for billing purposes, maybe for account verification. And now 55 million people are learning that a fun creative tool became a threat vector.
That's the asymmetry that bothers me. The company's incentive is to collect as much data as possible because data has value for marketing, for analytics, for training models. The user's incentive is to give as little as possible. But the user doesn't always have a choice. If the checkout form requires an address, you either provide it or you don't use the service.
And the legal frameworks we've discussed, FTC enforcement, GDPR compensation, they're all reactive. They punish after the breach happens. What we don't have is a strong preventative framework that says, if you're going to collect this category of data, you must implement these specific controls, and if you don't, you're liable regardless of whether a breach occurs.
Data minimization is a legal requirement rather than a best practice suggestion.
GDPR has data minimization as a principle, collect only what's necessary, but it's enforced after the fact, and the fines are for violations discovered during investigations, not proactively. We don't have a regulatory regime that audits companies' data collection practices before a breach and says, you don't need to store 55 million physical addresses, stop doing that.
Do you think the Suno breach changes the conversation about what counts as sensitive data? We've spent years talking about financial data and health data as the high-stakes categories. Address data has been treated as almost benign. It's in phone books, it's public record. But a phone book doesn't tie your address to your password and partial credit card number.
I think it might. The combination is what makes this dangerous, but the address is the ingredient that makes the combination physical. And I suspect we're going to see a shift toward treating physical addresses as sensitive, personally identifiable information requiring the same protections as financial data. Not because the address itself is secret, but because in context with other data, it becomes a key that unlocks real-world harm.
There's also a question here about what companies owe you after the breach, beyond the legal minimum. Daniel mentioned that some notification emails amount to finger-pointing. What would a good breach notification look like?
A good notification tells you what happened, when it happened, what data of yours was specifically exposed, what the company is doing about it, and what you should do about it. It doesn't blame vendors. It doesn't use passive voice. There was a security incident, data may have been accessed. It says, we failed to protect your data, here's exactly what was taken, here's when we detected it, here's what we're offering to make it right.
And the we failed part is important. It's not just about accountability as a moral value. It's about trust. If a company can't say we failed, I don't believe they've done the internal work to understand why they failed. And if they haven't done that work, they'll fail again.
The pattern with these breaches, especially at fast-growing tech companies, is that security is under-resourced relative to growth. Suno exploded in popularity. They were probably focused on scaling infrastructure, adding features, handling the load. Security is a cost center that doesn't generate revenue until a breach happens, at which point it becomes the only thing that matters.
And the Gizmodo reporting about source code and training data being exposed suggests the attacker had access to the crown jewels. This wasn't a perimeter breach where someone grabbed the user table and got out. This was deep.
Source code exposure means the attacker can study the code base for additional vulnerabilities. Training data exposure is even more interesting. It potentially reveals what music Suno used to train its models, which is a copyright and legal exposure on top of the security failure.
So Suno is looking at a security breach, potential regulatory action, and possibly copyright liability, all from the same incident. That's a rough Monday.
And it's a pattern we're going to see more of with AI companies. They collect user data, they collect training data, they build models that are valuable intellectual property. A breach at an AI company potentially exposes all three categories. It's a juicier target than a traditional SaaS company.
Let's circle back to Daniel's question about having that conversation with the company. If you call Suno or email their support and say, I'm one of the 55 million, what can you tell me about my specific exposure? What should you expect to hear?
Ideally, they should be able to tell you the exact timestamp of when your data was accessed, whether your account was specifically targeted or part of a bulk exfiltration, and what remediation steps they've taken for your account specifically. Whether they can do that depends on their login and forensics capability.
And if they can't?
Then they don't have adequate logging, which is itself a security failure. But practically, you're not going to get a customer support agent who can answer those questions. You're going to get a script. The real value of contacting them is creating a record that you were proactive, which matters if there's ever a class action settlement where you need to demonstrate that you took steps.
Which brings us to class actions. We talked about the difficulty of individual lawsuits. Class actions are the more common route for breach victims. What's the state of play there?
Class actions after data breaches have had mixed results in U.S. courts. The standing issue we discussed, the need for concrete injury, applies to class actions too. Some circuits have been more permissive than others. The Seventh Circuit, for example, has been relatively open to finding standing based on increased risk of future harm. Other circuits have shut that down. It's a patchwork.
So your recourse depends partly on where you live.
And on whether the Supreme Court eventually resolves the circuit split. For now, breach class actions typically settle. The company pays some amount, often a few million dollars, and affected users get a small check or free credit monitoring. The lawyers get paid, the company's insurance covers most of it, and the fundamental incentives don't change.
That's a bleak assessment.
It's realistic. The system we have isn't designed to make breach victims whole. It's designed to impose enough cost on companies that they invest in security to avoid future breaches. Whether that actually works is debatable, but that's the theory.
So if the legal system isn't going to protect you and the company's incentives are misaligned, what's the individual's best defense? Minimize the data you give out.
That's part of it. Use a password manager so each service gets a unique credential. Use a masked email service if you can. Question whether a service really needs your physical address. Sometimes it's for billing and there's no way around it, but sometimes it's optional and the form makes it look required. Freeze your credit proactively, not just after a breach, and treat every service you sign up for as a future breach waiting to happen, because statistically, that's what it is.
That's a paranoid way to live.
It's a realistic way to live in 2026. The surface area keeps growing. Federated login makes it easier to sign up for new services, which means more companies have pieces of your data. Each one is a potential SUNO.
And yet the convenience is real. I'm not going to stop using services. You're not going to stop. The question is whether we can have both convenience and security, or whether we're making a trade-off we don't fully understand.
I think we're making a trade-off where the costs are hidden until they're not. You don't feel the cost of giving your address to a music app until that address is in a breach database, and by then, it's too late to ungive it.
Let's talk about what answers people should be demanding, not just from SUNO, but from any company that holds sensitive data. Daniel asked what the conversation should look like.
Beyond the specific technical questions we covered, I think there are three demands that should be standard. 1. Tell me exactly what you had and exactly what was taken, with enough detail that I can assess my own risk. 2. Tell me what you're doing to prevent this from happening again, with specifics, not vague assurances about taking security seriously. 3. Provide remediation that matches the harm. If you lost my address, credit monitoring isn't enough.
That third one is going to be the hardest for companies to swallow, because it means acknowledging that different data types create different harms. A one-size-fits-all breach response. Here's a year of credit monitoring. Sorry for the inconvenience. Doesn't cut it when physical addresses are involved.
And yet that's exactly what most breach responses offer. It's a checkbox exercise. The legal department approves the minimum viable response. The PR team softens the language, and the notification goes out. The individual is left to figure out their actual risk on their own.
Which is why services like Have I Been Pwned have become essential infrastructure. Troy Hunt built something that does what companies should be doing, giving people clear, specific information about their exposure.
And the breach detail feature in Have I Been Pwned is genuinely innovative. It doesn't just say you were in the SUNO breach, it says for your account, the following data classes were exposed. That lets you triage. If you see address and partial credit card, you take different steps than if you just see email and password.
All right, let's get practical for anyone listening who might be in this breach. Concrete steps, right now.
Check, have I been pwned? Right now, Pause the episode if you need to. See what data classes are flagged for your Suno account. If address is among them, freeze your credit at all three bureaus today. Change your Suno password. Use a password manager to generate a strong, unique one. Enable two-factor authentication if Suno offers it. And if you reuse that password anywhere else, change it there too.
And for the conversation with Suno,
contact them through their official security channel, not through a link in an email. Ask the four questions we discussed, encryption at rest, dwell time, compromised authentication method, and whether they're offering address-specific remediation. Don't expect satisfying answers, but do create a record that you asked.
And if the notification email blames their managed security provider,
recognize that for what it is, a PR tactic, not a legal defense. The duty of care sits with Suno. They collected your address. They're responsible for it. Who they hired to manage their firewall is their problem, not yours.
That's the core of it, really. The duty of care doesn't evaporate because you paid someone else to handle security. If anything, outsourcing a critical function means you have a duty to vet and monitor that provider properly.
And if you failed at that, you failed twice. Once in your own security posture, and once in your vendor management. Pointing at the MSP isn't an excuse, it's a confession.
So where does this leave us going forward? Daniel asked how our societies have looked at negligence when data is the commodity. I think the honest answer is that we've treated data negligence as a lesser category of harm than physical negligence. If a company's faulty product injures you physically, the liability framework is well established. If a company's faulty security exposes your address and someone uses it to harm you, the legal path is murky.
And the Suno breach might be the case that starts to shift that. Not because it's the biggest breach ever, it's not. But because the combination of address data, partial financial data, and the scale of 55 million people creates a set of facts that's hard to dismiss as just another credential leak. This one feels different because it's different.
I think we're going to see a push for address data to be classified as sensitive PII with specific protection requirements. Not because addresses are secret, they're not, but because in combination with other data, they create physical risk. And our current frameworks don't account for combination risk very well.
That's the frontier. We regulate data categories in isolation, but harm often comes from the combination. Address plus partial credit card plus name is a different threat than any of those alone. The legal system hasn't caught up to that combinatorial reality.
And until it does, the burden is on the individual. Check. Have I been pawned? Freeze your credit? Demand answers? Minimize what you share? It's not a satisfying conclusion, but it's where we are.
One thing I'll add, if you're angry about this breach, channel that anger into asking questions of every service you use. What data do you have on me? Why do you need it? How are you protecting it? Companies respond to customer pressure more than they respond to regulatory threats because customer pressure affects revenue immediately.
That's a good note to end the discussion on. Let's get to the practical summary.
4 steps. 1. Check, have I been pooned-deed for your specific exposure? 2. Freeze your credit with all three bureaus if your address was exposed. 3. When you get a breach notification, verify it independently. Never click links in the email. 4. Demand specific answers from the company about encryption, dwell time, and remediation. Don't accept vague assurances.
And the broader point, the duty of care question isn't just legal. It's about what we as customers should expect and demand. If a company collects data that can harm you physically, not just digitally, they've taken on a higher responsibility, and we should hold them to it.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1810s, a sample of honey from the Canadian Arctic archipelago, specifically from the region that would later be known as Nunavut, was analyzed and found to contain trace amounts of a unique flavonoid compound produced only by the Arctic bellheather, a plant that blooms for roughly 3 weeks per year in continuous daylight. The compound, which gives the honey a faintly bitter aftertaste, degrades within 48 hours of extraction unless kept below freezing, making it one of the most ephemeral chemical signatures ever documented in a natural food product.
I have so many questions about who was analyzing Arctic honey in the 1810s, and none of them are going to be answered.
Thanks, Hilbert. The big open question we're left with, as the number of services holding our data keeps growing, how do we balance convenience against an attack surface that expands with every sign-up? And will the Suno breach be the moment we start treating physical addresses as sensitive data requiring real protection? We'll be back soon. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want to reach us, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.